Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Beauty. Dimitri, what's going on, man? Everybody else tuning in, appreciate you all. This is SEC Unfiltered, the SEC Unfiltered Hour right here on the the Texas Sports Unfiltered platform. Let me get this background change. Boom, there we are. All right, cool.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that. The SEC Unfiltered Hour right here on Texas Sports Unfiltered. I am Chris Phillips. He is Dimitri Ovanis. Again, guys, we are live right here, 3 to 4 Central, 4 to 5 Eastern, Monday through Friday. Myself, a cast of characters, if you will. Again, I'm joined by Dimitri. Dimitri, what's going on, man? Appreciate you taking the time. We've actually got some subject matter to get into today. It's been kind of like syllabus week this week, where we're just getting intros out of the way and getting folks warned up to us when we start pissing people off. So I'm glad we're able to do that.
Yeah, it is. I'm doing good, man. I appreciate the chance to do this again this week. I got to tell you, I've been wrapped up the last 2 days in the Deion stuff, just because this is such an unprecedented thing. And I'll be honest with you, like, I'm a defender of the guy. I like him. I hope it works out with him in Colorado. But man, oh man, the evidence is mounting up that he has stepped in more than he was ready for.
Yeah, it's been wild to follow. By the way, guys, taking your questions, your comments, make sure you leave those in the chat, no matter what platform you're on. I'll ask you this, Dimitri, because we got a lot to talk about with Deion. It's not SEC related, but it's college football, and we love talking college football here. Do you think Deion ever ends up as a head coach in the SEC? You think that day ever comes?
No, and I would tell you that I would bet good money, not knowing anything other than just the public perception of Deion we all have, I would bet good money he reached out to see if there was any interest in him at A&M when they fired Jimbo. Like, I guarantee that, because I think Deion thinks that if he could just get into Texas, he could be unstoppable. And what is frustrating is he's clearly a good recruiter. Imagine if he actually hit the road recruiting like a coach should do. They could be really, really good. But he is not only holding himself back, but now, man, the behavior of getting on social media and running down your former players, like, it's, and really your own players too, the way he talks about the guys that left, like, it's clearly sending a message to the guys that are still there. It's embarrassing. It's disappointing. And I am not a Deion hater by any stretch of the imagination. I think he is a dude that cannot admit that he does not know what he does not know. Mm-hmm.
And there are definitely Deion haters out there. I think you saw him last year, where it's like, there are people that they are waiting on the downfall with anticipation. And that's how you know, I think, you're a hater. And that really segues, Dimitri, us into our first topic of the day, which Deion's antics. Again, of course, anybody who hasn't been paying attention, been living in a rock, what have you, Deion goes out on social media, claps back at a former player. The Athletic does a piece profiling all the guys that left. Player speaks out, talks about the emotions of everything that happened. Deion claps back. Shedeur Sanders gets into the action, which I thought that was crazy. It's like, we just saw Spencer Rattler fall, you know, 2-3 rounds or however far he fell, you know, because of, oh, by the way, he did this one documentary one time at 17 years old, and we think he might still be an asshole because of that. Right. I mean, if you think that, like, this post, you know, he's less than a year away from going through the process, being drafted. I mean, who knows what it can do to his draft stock, but we're going to start with this. Deion Sanders and what has unfolded the last couple of days. How would SEC fans react to a coach behaving like Deion? And before we really get in the reaction, Dimitri, I would venture to say this. We've never seen like a post on social media like that, where it's like calling out a player. But have we not kind of seen SEC coaches at the podium say things that, like, we've seen coaches say things that it has at least, like, basically the question we're asking here is, can SEC fans be objective with their own school? Can they call out their own coaches, their own players, their own administration? I think we've seen moments before where fan bases have been tested, where it's like, okay, the objectivity has been tested. And most of the time they fail. But, like, I feel like to a lesser degree, this has kind of happened.
Oh, it definitely has happened in certain instances. Like, the one that I think springs to mind right away is your Gamecocks and Steve Spurrier. Look, leaving your team in the middle of the season is a shitty thing to do. It doesn't matter what you accomplished for the school, and Spurrier should be celebrated as one of, if not the best coach that South Carolina football has ever had. But the way he left that team was pretty shitty, and I think it took a good chunk of Carolina fans a couple of years to come around to that. You know, it's always interesting to me the way SEC fans, certain groups of SEC fans, will rally around their guy like they can do no wrong, and others, you know, it's like, hey, you got to prove that you are worthy of my loyalty. Like, Arkansas comes to mind, right? Like, we don't have to go over again what they did with Houston Nutt, but it's hard to please those people to be coach there. However, you know, there are a lot of Auburn fans that don't believe Hugh Freeze has ever done anything wrong in his life.
And I mean, I think what's so interesting to meet you with the fan base is just like, they're, it's really one way or the other. They're either all in on your side. He's our guy. I mean, we see this in the portal too. It's like, you know, guys, people will say all kinds of, I mean, we saw it with the Arkansas, Kentucky, the John Calipari thing to Arkansas. Yep. It was so funny there were some Arkansas fans calling out their own people, pulling up replies of when they played and what people were saying about John Calipari. And then obviously he goes to Arkansas. It's like, he's our guy. He's the best. It's like, you know, and when they're on your side, they're on your side and they'll be on your side. You mentioned South Carolina, man. Like, it's so funny. I tell people a lot, I'm not too old to remember a day when Will Muschamp was beloved in Columbia. Yep. He was, and there's a lot of people that don't want to admit that, but, like, I mean, we don't have to, like, go through the entire thing. But, like, I was one that very early on, I say very early, but I was probably the first to say Will Muschamp should be fired at South Carolina. And I was damn near crucified for it. And years later, those people are leading the charge themselves as well. And they're like, no, I never supported the guy. And it's like, you were literally one of those people that made my life a living hell. Let's just call it what it is. So it's like, once, like, when that guy's your guy, he's your guy until the moment he isn't. And then it's like, he's a pariah. He's the worst. We will turn on you. And there's a bit of a hypocrisy, I think, because, again, we're talking with SEC fans. If to your point, Hugh Freeze did this, I feel very confident. And it's not just Auburn. We're not just going to pick on Auburn. Kirby Smart, Billy Napier. Why not? Billy Napier. I mean, whatever SEC school, you would have your pocket of realistic, normal, level-headed, but that's not what SEC fans are. They're not realistic, normal, level, like the true fanatics.
Yeah.
Especially, and that's who lives on social media, is the people that are the fanatics. Like, well, really, I mean, truly.
Look, I didn't pick Hugh Freeze just because he's Auburn's head coach. You want to talk about live on social media. You want to talk about harassing just reporters, naysayers, whatever. I know I've had Hugh Freeze slide into my DMs because he listened to a podcast where I compared him to the $1 million man, Ted DiBiase. You know, I've had him slide into my DMs and say he's praying for me because I said, you know, I made fun of the if you have any information about these young men, email compliance at olemiss.edu tweet that he sent out. And, you know, I mean, there's all the stuff about when he was a high school coach, all that kind of stuff. I think that what Dion has done by not just naming names, but, like, tagging a dude on social media who was asked a question for a story and told his story and has moved on, seems to be very happy at Austin Peay, not even thinking about competing with Colorado anymore. And he has, not only does he have his former coach coming at him, it seems like his former coach has deputized his quarterback, who happens to be his son, to do the same thing. Like, I think that's where it would really kind of test the boundaries. You know, Alabama's kind of going through this right now where, look, Kalen DeBoer is accused of doing something that, you know, would be, for me, would be tough to square with him being my head coach, letting a player play, excuse me, while he was actively under investigation for sexual assault while he was at Washington. We don't know all the facts, so I'm not saying that is exactly what happened.
I did not know that was happening.
I'm not saying that's exactly what happened. There is no, we don't know all the facts yet, but I'm saying that is something that is being questioned right now. And if that happened, even as an Alabama fan, I would feel a little bit gross about my head coach. I don't think most Alabama fans would. And what's interesting is these are the same Alabama fans that want to remind you that Hugh Freeze hired hookers, that want to remind you about the accusations that some of the girls at the high school he taught at made about the way he was a little bit creepy just in general, not doing, not making inappropriate acts, but just he didn't seem to know how to behave around people. It's just very interesting. You're right. There's a level of loyalty that sometimes it is hard to look in the mirror. I do think what Deion has done here is so beyond the pale of the way a college coach should behave that I would hope he would be held accountable in the SEC. I don't expect he's going to be held accountable at Colorado because I don't think anyone, like even the administration, they're not paying attention to the football program. You know?
What he did is wild. It's hard to believe. I mean, it's really, it's like, I can't fathom an SEC coach doing it. It's, you know, I'm someone that I believe that you should be able to speak freely and give your opinion. But there's certainly, when you're in a position, when you're the head coach of a football program, certainly when it's Power Five, certainly when it's SEC.
Yeah.
You know, you should be held to a higher standard. You should be held to a higher standard. And
yeah, listen, I'm not, I am old enough to remember, and I am, I don't mean to embarrass you and your grind set mantras, but I am old enough to remember when a young Chris Phillips, Twitter bio said, I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman. That is a business comma man. That is how Deion carries himself. Right. And to be fair, that's kind of how you should be carrying yourself nowadays. If you are a college coach of any sort, football, basketball, softball, speed walking, you name it, because it is all about branding your program and who you are. There's a reason these kids commit to places you would never expect them to. They're not committing to a school. They're committing to a coach. And I don't know if I am Colorado's AD and our outlook is a little bit sunnier for what we could be in football, aside from being relegated to the Big 12. I don't know that I would tolerate this.
And the irony of it, too, is Deion Sanders since then, before then, too, but since then has gone the whole religion, Jesus route, you know.
Yeah, and this is why it's so tough to talk about this as someone that does like him is I think that stuff and, you know, all of the think pieces about Colorado being Black America's program, like some of his critics are so outwardly driven by race. They have no leg to stand on in what their criticisms are. It is all about like coded ways of saying you cannot stand seeing this program become quote unquote too Black. That when you have legitimate criticism of him, you're a little bit hesitant because how is it going to be read when so much of the criticism is coded in that way? It's, you know, I was having a conversation with Lauren Brownlow, who I do a Carolina Panthers podcast with. She is a diehard Beyonce fan. And I said, yeah, Beyonce's never been my jam, but I hesitate to say that because so much of the criticism about Beyonce really borders on like, hey, what is it you really don't like about this girl? You know what I mean? And I feel like the same thing is true of Deion. But in this case, I don't think there's any defending the guy. I really don't.
Yeah. And I know he utilizes social media, obviously, like he does it for good. It's really, really good, but it just... To me, it just screams again, and I've learned this through my own experiences, you know, anytime you swing down on social media or really any interaction, but definitely social media where everybody can see it. Anytime you swing down, you lose. You lose
yes,
the fight.
100%.
It just, I mean, you're Deion Sanders. You're an NFL Hall of Famer. You're, you know, I know you're the head coach at Colorado, but there's a lack of self-awareness here that's a little bit alarming. It's alarming.
Yeah, I mean, this is, yeah, swinging down is a really good way to say it, because imagine if Kirby Smart comes out and really decides this year, like, he's going to let everybody know they're going to take it to Vanderbilt, right? Like, what on earth is that accomplishing?
You know, this makes me think of, Dimitri, it's a different situation, but the way Ole Miss handled the the kid coming out and what was the, I forget the exact case. It was the kid.
The kid who said he needed a mental health break.
Right, right. But like, yeah, they just completely ignored it basically. And it went, yeah, away.
I mean, look, I think that they got really fortunate. Remember, there was a secret recording leaked of the way that Lane Kiffin talked to him. And the way Lane Kiffin talked to him is, it was harsh, man. But I think that the points Lane was making were valid. Like, you know, you certainly don't want your head coach on audio recording being heard to say, fuck that mental health shit. But the point that he was making, which was, you know, you can't just disappear. If this was really going on, you've got to keep us informed. Like, you know, we felt abandoned just like you felt abandoned by us. I think there were enough people that could see what Lane's point was, even if the language was, you know, rude, frankly. That's not what this is.
And he also didn't publicly humiliate the kid.
Exactly. You know, what came out was by the kid's choice, not by Lane Kiffin's.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just, I don't know. I don't know that Deion's going to like learn a lesson from this. He's obviously gone on social media since this has all happened and been, I mean, he's been like, you know, it's bad when there's people that have like, and people with like 100 followers on social media that are tagging Deion, they're like, this is a view of Deion walking through the crowd of haters. And he's like, he's reposting those people.
Yeah.
So like, how deep into reading the replies do you have to be? You know, look, what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he's reading every reply. There's no doubt.
Listen, I've got a 12-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter, and I do my best to have an influence on them. But, you know, there are ways they influence me, too. Like, I don't think I would be a Taylor Swift fan if it weren't for my daughter, right? Like, I would not have watched a game of the Stanley Cup playoffs if it were not for my son. Deion's kids are influencing him in a bad way. And this has nothing to do with social media. I mean, social media is how it's manifested itself. But look, man, Deion raised himself up from something. Shadur and Shiloh grew up rich, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Shadur and Shiloh don't know the meaning of the word consequence. And that's kind of how Deion is behaving right now. And look, should he be fired? Should he be suspended? Whatever. I don't know. That's not what I'm here to say. I think that the consequence is going to be, there are a lot of dudes that are now going to think twice about the way this went down. I mean, look, Cormani McClain, who last year was Louie, is now, oh, I don't even know who that is. Come on, man.
I mean, and to your point, too, if Shadur Sanders feared consequence, he would have never posted. Because, I mean, you think about it, I would have to imagine from his standpoint, he's saying, I'm not going to fall in the draft. My dad is Deion Sanders.
So like, it's interesting. Ben Axelrod of Awful Announcing put out a column today that said, hey, Shadur's odds of being the number one pick are falling, and there's only one thing you can attribute this to, right? It's the way he and Deion behave on social media. I would argue that, like, I think after this draft class, it has become a little bit more public knowledge that next year's quarterback class is not good. Hmm. But even if that's the public perception, like, that's not good.
Hmm. No, it's not at all. I would say this too, Dimitri, because, you know, the thing that started this is we're talking about if this happened with an SEC head coach, would SEC fan bases, how would they react to this? I will say that SEC fans, they back their guy as head coach, but the one thing they might back more is the players. Because even in the NIL era, like, the players are the backbone of the programs. Like, people, they don't wear the coach's jersey. They wear the player's jersey. So I think,
agreed,
I think that's the one thing. You know, it might be, I don't know, it may be different if, like, a former player, because we've all seen this too, like, fans will turn, like, if a former player comes out and says, you know, the program was this or that. I mean, I've seen it firsthand, and they will just rip the kid to shreds. So maybe that, I don't know, but yeah. So, you know, like, for example, if Juice Wells came out and said, yeah, the way they're doing things over there at South Carolina, it's not quite that great. And then Shane Beamer quote tweeted it and was kind of clapping back. South Carolina fans would have Shane Beamer's back. There's no question. There's no question. So
I think that Nick Saban was a little bit too old school to acknowledge that, yes, we won a lot of championships, but we won a lot of championships because we were able to get the Derrick Henrys and the Julio Joneses, and that level of player was not coming to Alabama. I think he's a little too old school, but by the end of Kirby Smart's career, if he were to come out and say, yeah, we changed the trajectory of Georgia football, and we're really proud of what we accomplished, but that wouldn't happen without and start listing all the great defenders and all the great running backs that came through there. I don't know that that would be unexpected to me, because I think this, those guys that are around my age, I'm 42. I believe Kirby is 48 or 49. I think they are very quick to adapt to the realities of NIL portal, and frankly, just giving the kids the respect they deserve, just giving the kids the acknowledgement that I make what, 8 figures a year because you are so good at what you do.
Yeah, the kids are the superstars, which is, right. You know, we've waited a long time, I think, to say that. Certainly the coaches are stars as well, but the kids are finally being compensated to what they deserve. So you guys tell us in the comments, what do you think? How would SEC fans react? How would you react if Steve Sarkisian was
how would Texas fans react?
It's honestly hard to comprehend, because I don't think we'll ever have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But, certainly.
It's situational, right? Like, if Steve Sarkisian did this, it would be hard to believe. If you told me Tom Herman did this, okay, I could see it.
All right, let me ask you this then, Dimitri. Who would be the top names in the SEC right now that you would, like, if I told you they did this, you'd be like, all right, well, I could see it.
Oh, Lane. I mean, that's not that. That's not like hating on Lane Kiffin or anything like that. I think Lane knows how to use social media. And if he ever decided that he wanted to use it for evil, yeah, I could totally see him doing that.
He actually quote tweeted us yesterday with the rat poison emoji. So we appreciate Lane for interacting with the brand. Always fun when Lane Kiffin shares the stuff. Dimitri, let's keep it moving. Obviously, we got another fun topic here. And this was one I drew inspiration from, and it doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately, but Chewing Clock, the old podcast that you guys had, you and Tyler McComas, who Oklahoma guy, boo. Anyways, did a great job, was really, really fun. And the thing I loved about it was all like this, you guys came up with a bunch of random topics, which I thought was really, really fun. And this is one of them. We're going to jump into this. College football storylines that you're going to be sick of by week 4 of the season. They can be SEC. They can be college football as a whole. They can be a storyline that, and I know you and I, we've got a joint one. We got a couple of our own. And you guys leave them in the comments. Again, they can be storylines that it doesn't have to be like storylines you think everybody would be sick of, just that you're going to be tired of hearing about, that you think are going to be things that manifest themselves into things where it's like, okay, like, let's move on. We've heard enough about it.
I think this topic, when we did it a few years ago, manifested out of me one time saying to Tyler, if I hear that Hunter Renfrow started his career as a walk-on one more goddamn time.
Or that Jake Bentley should have been in high school.
That's right. That's right.
That too.
Right. The state of South Carolina was the center of uncreative college football commentary. All right, good point. Leave them in the comments, because not only coming out of the Big 12 do you guys have one, but there are so many rooting interests in Texas. I would be interested to hear what it is that Texas fans think they are going to be sick of by the end of the season. Can I start with our joint one, just because I think this is the one that's going to hold over everything. And that's going to be Kalen DeBoer replacing Nick Saban. Like, what would Nick Saban have done? Is Kalen DeBoer living up to the long shadow that Saban cast? Like, I think it is going to be a part of every broadcast of every Alabama game this season.
There's probably never going to have been a coach more critiqued than Kalen DeBoer is going to be. I mean, I think, like, obviously, I didn't watch the first couple games or first season when Ron Zook took over for Steve Spurrier. Like, I'm trying to think of when guys followed up legends.
You know, the one that should be a one-for-one but can't be because of the extreme circumstances is Bill O'Brien taking over for Joe Paterno.
And for obvious reasons, it's not like that as a – yeah.
I think Jimbo taking over for Bobby Bowden is kind of off the board because Jimbo had been at Florida State for so long. What I mean is I don't remember that becoming a focal point of the media.
Right. And this one definitely will be. I mean, every decision he makes, even if things are going well, if they, you know, they've got, I'm thinking about the first four weeks of the season, they've got that game at Wisconsin, I think, in week 2 or 3. If they go to that one and they don't win by 50, you know what I mean? Like, people are going to be second guessing decisions and just everything. I mean, from scheme to what he wear. I mean, I remember people telling me that, you know, there were people that wanted Nick Saban to wear houndstooth on game day because they wanted to chant. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be people that critique it to that level. And I think it's going to be one of those things, to your point, we're going to get it on College game day. It's like, you know, there's these buzz topics, Dimitri, and I'm not calling anybody out because we do it. There's things that are like, we love to talk about quarterback battles. We love to talk about hot seats. There's just things that move the needle all the time, every time. Like Bama, talking about Bama, that's going to be, everybody's going to go to that. We need some impressions today. Boom.
I was about to say, I had an editor once tell me, if there is nothing that is taking over headlines, come to me with an idea about Alabama, Ohio State, or Notre Dame.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, that's it. So there's going to be a lot of chatter about Kalen DeBoer and comparing everything. Again, comparing year ones, and like, we're just going to get it shoved down our throats constantly through the first 4 weeks of the season. Second one, Dimitri, and this was one from me, and we just talked about this.
Why did you put up that comment from Hair of the Dog? For people to read.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, so Hair of the Dog calls it here. Tired stories, Deion Sanders. We're already tired of it. We haven't even gotten into magazine season yet, Dimitri, right? We haven't even gotten to that point yet.
Yeah.
We're not even remotely close to talking season. We're already talking about Deion Sanders, Hair of the Dog. Great comment here. And that's mine. And our second one, that's mine. The latest thing that Deion Sanders and or Shedeur Sanders has said, whether it be on social media, in a post-game press conference, in a post-game interview, just like, and I'm not a Deion hater, certainly. And I hope they do well. I think Deion had some really fun flair. Like, I'm on the side, Dimitri, selfishly, because I'm a content man. Like, anything that's going to drive fun content, I'm for it. Like, I love what Deion does for the sport of college ball. I'd love if Deion was in the SEC. I mean, that would be an electric factory. But it's going to get exhausting, especially because you know why? Colorado's going to suck.
So through the first 4 weeks of the season, I think it's going to be 100% turned up to the level that we saw it last year. Now, if they come out and they are 1-3, maybe Fox and ESPN do a reassessment, but there's no reason to not think that they are going to treat Deion the exact same way they did last year to begin the season. I'll give you my first one is coast-to-coast conference travel, man. Listen, ESPN and Fox, you did this. Like, and I'm not saying that you orchestrated the move of Red River to the SEC or of USC and UCLA to the Big Ten, but you sure did let the Big Ten and the SEC know that there is money in it for them to do these sorts of things. The SEC, you could say at least every state involved, you could say at least they all touch. It's a continuous footprint. That's not true. That's now the SEC is the only power conference that's true of. So when you are marveling at, oh my, can you believe Cal and Miami is a conference game now? Well, you did this. You're the reason it's a conference game now.
I was just thinking, Dimitri, I'm sure you recall the Big Ten commercial from last year where it's like showing the states.
Yeah.
Like, are they really going to start in Cali and it's just going to fly across over to Champaign, Illinois? You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah, I mean, it's going to be – it's never not nauseating for the powers that be that make decisions to complain about the decisions they made. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like I had a real problem last year. Do you remember when Pat McAfee made that comment about telling Washington State fans to quit crying? And then the next week on Big Noon Kickoff, the Fox crew was talking about, oh, this is a place for you, Washington State. We love you. And it's like, man, they know you're the reason they're in this predicament. Like, quit insulting the public.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, like, there's my FIU degree right there. Remember that Florida International has played for years in a conference where a trip to El Paso, Texas is a normal thing. And those are schools with much lower budgets.
Yeah.
So, hey, welcome to the way a lot of conferences have lived, Power 2 or Power 4, whatever we're calling it now.
And two, I'll say this, like, the folks in college football complaining is laughable. It's the sports like baseball and basketball and softball and like non-revenue generating women's basketball that they have the right to complain. Football, I mean, we're flying private, guys. We're flying.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Exactly.
Like, we're not flying coach. Another one from me, Dimitri, and this is one that the folks on Texas Sports Unfiltered, I think, will appreciate and will be able to resonate with this one. storyline I'll be sick of by week four is the, because I looked at the schedules here, okay? Texas through 4 weeks, no SEC games. There was a game at Michigan. There's no SEC games. Oklahoma, week four, they have Tennessee. So maybe I'm cheating a little bit. This will be kind of the storylines going into week four. But we're just going to get on a week-in, week-out basis the question of, are Texas and Oklahoma ready for the rigors of the SEC? And again, their play in non-conference is going to be more critiqued and more criticized and more closely analyzed than it ever has been before, because the amount of shit talking that is going to be coming about how Texas and Oklahoma are not ready for the SEC is going to be, we're going to get sick of it. Like, especially talking about Texas, where it's like, hey, this team is really good no matter the conference. Is Oklahoma going to struggle? Heck, I don't know. The folks in here hope they go 0-12, and that's totally fine. But it's going to become where it's like, okay, like, we're about to find out, thankfully, but like, we're beating a dead horse here. Truly.
No, for sure. And I think you're going to hear a lot of Big 12 shit talk. Not that way directly. I'm saying you were going to hear a lot of what could very easily be deduced as Big 12 shit talk when people say things like, oh, hey, there's no, you know, week in and week out of the SEC, it's a grind. You don't get the break of Iowa State, or you don't get the break of West Virginia. Like, South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt are not in this conference, right? Like, the SEC has done a really good job of branding itself, not of something that it isn't, because when you have that many teams win that many national championships in a row, you've earned the reputation. But I think one thing that all of those people that are doing the, is Oklahoma ready, is Texas ready for this, is they're not remembering that the bottom of the Big 12 the last couple of years has not been as low as the bottom of the SEC.
And there's a couple, I mean, again, if you're Georgia questioning these programs, fine. If you're Ole Miss, fine. Bama, fine. LSU, okay, I could get with that. But yeah, it's the lower middle of the pack, bottom of the league that sometimes chirps the loudest. That it's, again, we talk about that SEC hierarchy and that the rungs on that ladder, and it's like, hey, don't beat your chest too loudly, because it's going to be you that is unfortunately winning a game or two less and is moving down that ladder and is feeling the effects of this. So, you know, I mean, good luck with that.
Yeah, I think my last one is one that's going to speak to Texas fans' hearts, not just because it says good things about Texas, but it does say something about A&M that you cannot say about other programs. My last one is this idea that there is a soft landing spot waiting for Florida State and Clemson in the SEC. I don't know a nice way to say this other than to say it directly. The SEC, people that work in the SEC office will tell you, when you ask them if that is a possibility, they will tell you Florida State and Clemson do not offer them something they don't already have, right? If you look at some of those breakdowns of ways fans are distributed across their state, Florida, the amount of Florida fans makes the amount of Florida State fans seem insignificant. Now, the difference is, you know, why Red River? Well, number one, you're getting two marquee programs that are difference makers. We are beyond geography at this point, right? Nobody cares that Georgia Tech is in Atlanta. Nobody watches Georgia Tech, so Georgia Tech isn't valuable anymore. The SEC didn't care that Texas is in Austin, even though Austin's a growing market. The SEC didn't care, that nowhere in Oklahoma is particularly large enough to be attractive. Those are big national brands. Florida State, it's been a long time since that was true. Clemson, that has not been true. Even at their very best, their fan base stretched from Anderson, South Carolina, to Greenville, South Carolina. That is a geography joke. It is a good one. Look it up. What I will tell you is, if the ACC is going to implode, I fully believe this, and granted, I live in Raleigh, North Carolina, so I'm shaded by this a little bit. We will take Duke, and we will take UNC, and the rest of you, good luck in Conference USA.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, and I think you make a great point. I think it is something, Dimitri, to echo. We are going to be – we've been hearing it for years, so we're going to be certainly sick of hearing – I'm sick of hearing it right now, but by week four, no doubt. But – on that note, I think you have to think of it from the standpoint of gaining market share. And so you're not, you know, you're not gaining, you might gain another school, but like, you have the state of Florida. You have the state of South Carolina, but you're not in North Carolina. You're not in Virginia.
Well, so, and the other thing too is like, all right, so the Big 12, or excuse me, the Big 10 rather, wants to get as many schools as they can in big markets. And so, hey, they add USC, UCLA. Okay, now we're at, what did that put them at? 16. But hey, Oregon and Washington are on sale. Let's take them and get to 18. I don't think the SEC is going to go to 18 just to go to 18. I think to grow, it's going to have to be something like a Duke and North Carolina, because they were only going to 16 if they could get a Texas and an Oklahoma.
Who would you say you think the next two would be? If you had to, you know, it's, I agree with you. I don't think it's, even though I will say, and it, you know, obviously painful to compliment Clemson, but like Clemson feels like an SEC. I mean, even Florida State, they feel like SEC teams. I understand why the SEC won't add them. I mean, do you go North Carolina and Virginia? Like, is that the,
I think realistically, because having some conversations with some administrators here, I think North Carolina and Duke and Virginia really want a Big Ten invite. They really want a Big Ten invite because academics matter to the ACC. The Big Ten has done a good job of branding that academics matter to them. I think if for the SEC, if that means North Carolina State and Virginia Tech, I don't think they'd say no to it, right?
I think that's a pretty good ad. I think that's a, from the football quality standpoint,
sure,
that's a pretty good ad.
And here's the other thing too, and we'll wrap up this talk on this. I think SEC fans and Texas fans, welcome to the perch that Alabama fans sit on as I say this. I think SEC fans in places like South Carolina, in places like Ole Miss and Mississippi State, Arkansas, need to remember that they were in the right place at the right time. If the SEC were forming today, right, I bet dollars to donuts that what's the name of the commissioner of the SEC?
Greg Sankey,
thank you. I would bet dollars to donuts that Greg Sankey would be more intrigued by UCF than he would be by Mississippi State.
I think that's a good point. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear that, but I think that's a good point.
No, it's, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's nothing wrong with having been in the right place at the right time, but acknowledge that that's the case.
Well, I mean, we've talked about Florida, you know, South Carolina's in the SEC because Florida State said no. Let's just call it for what it is. So it's funny. Ike comments, Ike, we're trying to, no, we're getting away. He's just Florida State and Clemson. So he's like, whatever. That's who's going to jump in.
I mean, the point he could be making is it doesn't matter what you say. That's going to be what's left.
Yeah. I mean, it very well could be. I mean, I love the idea. If they're going to add two more, I love the idea of NC State and Va-Tech. Va-Tech's back on the way up. I mean, and I know you're probably the same way. Like, when I think of Va-Tech, I think of fantastic football, a great program. Yeah. It seems like they're getting back to that. And then NC State, you know, I think they're a program that actually draws a lot of parallels with a team like South Carolina, where they're kind of just always knocking on that 7-8 win, maybe a little bit higher.
It's not even just that they draw parallels with South Carolina. It's that even in the 5-6 win seasons, you know, Carter Finley Stadium is still full, just like Williams-Brice is still full. Yeah. And I mean, look, I can see the very tip top of Carter Finley Stadium out my window. So I would certainly welcome SEC games in my backyard. But I think the conference would do all it can to get Duke and Carolina, because, again, I think they are more interested in brands than geography.
I think that makes a lot of sense, too, when you're thinking about more than just football.
Exactly.
I would say that
because look at what North Carolina is good at. It is not just basketball, right? Like, suddenly the SEC becomes a women's soccer powerhouse, becomes even more of a baseball powerhouse, becomes a very good basketball school. I guess at some point we would have to have SEC lacrosse and we would be a powerhouse in that as well. Like, those are programs that operated like Pac-12 programs did, where everything is important.
Duke, also a baseball powerhouse. You talk about boosting the league in that way, and yeah, they would do that for sure. So
yeah,
no, it's going to be interesting, man. I mean, you know, to your point, like, we're talking about this in Florida State and Clemson. I really think storylines will be sick of, Dimitri, just conference expansion in general. Like, and you know, like, we're not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. But we get there about, after SEC Media Days, end of July, early August, where, you know, we got some reports coming from fall camp, but these things are so locked down, like Fort Knox. Like, I remember last year, it felt like the whole month of August, all we talked about was conference realignment. outside of like the preview content you're doing, like it's what's the story today? Boom.
Well, I think part of that is because the last two summers, two summers in a row, we had earth-shattering conference realignment news, right? In 21, it was Red River to the SEC, and in 22, it was the LA schools to the Big Ten. And I will tell you, I was in Seattle when the LA schools to the Big Ten story broke, and there was a gasp that I heard walking down the street as people were getting the news. I don't mean like a collective. I mean, like, you could see that there were some people that this meant a lot to, because some of those areas are better college football areas than we may realize, because we're on the East Coast, or, you know, very much in our SEC mindset. But like Salt Lake City, Seattle, they care about college football out there, man.
They do indeed. Dimitri, we got a little bit of a bonus topic here. Let's embrace debate a little bit. You may feel indifferent about this, but knowing you, I know you don't. our buddy Josh Pate brought, I mean, this has been a conversation for years, and one that I felt strongly about for a while, but it became a topic of conversation as the college football playoff expands and college football ever changing. And I mean, this feels like the time, if you're going to do something radical or make change, nothing is too radical at this point. So the question is, the group of five, should they have their own playoff? Because right now, obviously, the way we're expanding, maybe a separate conversation, but Dimitri, the fact that we got 12 and then we're already talking about 16 and we haven't played a game is not like that shows it's all about the money and nothing else. But G5, should G5 have their own separate playoff, or do you like the idea of maybe a potential Cinderella story in the current landscape of college football?
Well, let me say, first of all, that I approach college football the way our Native American brothers and sisters approach the buffalo. I am for using all parts, right? That being said, as much as I wish that like FIU and Hawaii, two G5 teams I really do care a lot about, as much as I wish they had the opportunity to experience some sort of championship feeling, as long as we are operating with this fallacy that what happens at UTEP is the exact same as what happens in Athens, Georgia, then no, it seems stupid to me. It seems like as useless as the NIT to me.
I've always said this, Dimitri. I don't think App State should be playing for the same trophy as Alabama. I don't think Georgia Southern should play for the same trophy as Georgia. FIU shouldn't play for the same trophy as the Florida Gators, et cetera. I mean, I'm somebody that, you know, growing up, fun fact about me, we would go to Beach Mountain, North Carolina, which is right by Boone, North Carolina, about a 45-minute drive. Would go up there with my grandfather. We'd play golf, hang out. We had a condo, whatever, a lot of fun. Anyways, so we would venture over to Boone, go have dinner, whatever. And I've been to The Rock. I've been to a game. And so, and my
more
grandfather,
importantly, have you been to the two-story Wendy's?
I think I've seen it, but I have not.
Okay.
Been. Right. But the next time, I will be going back to Beach Sugar Mountain very soon. I will make sure to do that.
Very good.
So have experienced Boone. You kind of, like, I developed somewhat of a soft spot, right? Whatever. My grandfather would watch the games. But anyways, I recall we watched the three straight national championships, Armani Edwards, Coco Hillary, all these different guys. What was it? 05, 06, 07, I think. Mm-hmm. And I remember when App State made the leap and went from, at that time, was it D1AA? Is that what
that's
they
right.
call it? It was that's D1AA. Right. And they made the jump to the FCS, the group of five, the group of five, because they were FCS. It went from D1AA to FCS, which D1AA sounds so much cooler.
It really does.
It really does. But they were FCS, made that jump to G5. And I just remember thinking, it's going to be great from a money standpoint and resources and probably exposure and like, but they'll never win a national title again. And that's unfortunate. That's so unfortunate.
And to your point, like, look, I was already living in North Carolina in 07 when they beat Michigan. And the thing about North Carolina is and I'm sure this is true in Texas too. I don't know for sure, but I would guess. The state university system is so competitive that you have huge pockets of App State ECU fans all over the place here in Raleigh anyway. So that was a big, big deal here when that happened. And to your point about, man, they're never going to feel that again, is they came in and I think in their second year won the Sun Belt. Look at what James Madison is doing in the Sun Belt right now. There's not a huge difference between the G5 and the top level of FCS. It really is a money decision. And as a fan base, you've got to be comfortable with your new reality to accept it. I know that's something like, for instance, Georgia Southern fans are not necessarily in love with.
Yeah, because they used to be dominant. I mean, and that obviously that rivalry with App State and Georgia Southern was electric. And, you know, I mean, it's just, again, it's one of those things. Like, I mean, I'm sure for, you know, the amount of exposure Liberty got when they faced Oregon in the, was it Fiesta Bowl, I believe.
Yep.
They've never had that before. They also have probably never taken an ass whooping like they took in that ball game. So was it worth the trade-off? You know what I mean? Like, was it worth the trade-off?
I mean, you know, you look at, it was Sam Houston's coach last year, right? That pretty openly said that he hated this. He hated going up to the FBS because Conference USA was such a, look, coming from the Southland, there are schools in the FCS and the G5, or excuse me, conferences in the FCS and the G5 that have schools all over the place. The Southland was not one of them. And boy, Conference USA is a big wake-up call. And when the only game you can win is against Kennesaw State, who is also coming up this year, it's just a very different existence for a team that won a national championship, what, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Demetri, I know it's all about the money. I get that. I know it is. But, man, like, it would bum me out as, let's just say, an App State fan to know that you'll never reach that. I mean, and winning the Sun Belt is nice. Like, it's very nice. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But you'll never reach that real pinnacle again. And listen, Here's what I would say.
I would be and am very much for the power conferences becoming their own division. I am. I think it makes sense. I think that I would rather see it. I say this as somebody that is excited to see that Texas helmet and that Georgia helmet collide in a conference game now, from now on. Mm-hmm. I would rather see the, I think Western Kentucky is one of the sacrificial lambs on Alabama's schedule. I would very much like to see that replaced with all Power 5 level opponents and then make the G5 its own division and crown a national champion from there. I'm all for that. But if we are saying these are all FBS schools, I think it is silly that we are not making a formal division between the two.
Well, like you said, we're kidding ourselves. I mean, you know, exactly. obviously COVID was terrible, but the 2020 college football season, that season was weird, but a 10-game all-SEC schedule was electric. It was. Yep. I mean,
it was.
We had great games every week. I mean, it just – so I don't – I mean, and you know what's interesting, though, Demetri? I've seen on social media, like, there are some folks who are fans of G5 schools who this convo really pisses off. Like, they don't like the idea of, like, a separate playoff or the G – nobody's going to watch. The G5's going to be – you know, and I think I actually kind of get it from this standpoint because I saw somebody talking about that – if this happens, like, G5 barely gets talked about as it is, and they're just basically going to be forgotten. So maybe it's keeping it together is kind of the one thing keeping G5 as relevant as it is. But, you know, so maybe I'm speaking too much from the college football diehard perspective. Like, I'll watch a G5 playoff, man. Like, but maybe the casual college football fan will not. And so that's some attention they don't want to miss out on. I guess I get it from that standpoint.
I mean, but I do too, but like I said, I like all college football. It is somebody that watches a lot of those Conference USA and Mountain West games on CBS Sports Network. Dude, CBS Sports Network treats it like nobody is watching because nobody is watching. If nobody is watching you anyway, then do the thing that gives you the opportunity to show off to that level of athlete. You are better off. You would have more fun. You would have a better experience starting here than being on the bench at Georgia, Texas, Alabama, you name it.
I don't know. I had fun watching those games, watching Florida Atlantic and whoever.
No, I'm with you, but like, listen to the announcers and look at the cameras and tell me that CBS gives a good goddamn about those.
Yeah. Games. When I think of CBS Sports Network, I think the first memory that comes to mind is the Mississippi State Louisiana Tech game where the fumble was
98 yard fumble.
Yeah. Yes. it's things like that. So I don't know, man. I just, like I said, when App State, you know, I know it was great for them and it's still great. I mean, I think their program is doing well. Heck, I mean, they beat South Carolina a couple years ago.
And I mean listen, the Sun Belt did a good job of bringing in not only geographic rivalries, but schools, G5 schools that actually have fans. App State, Marshall, Georgia Southern, Troy, Louisiana. Like, those are all schools that have actual fan bases. Yeah. I want for them to have that that feel, that excitement of being able to win something. I just don't think it makes sense the way that the FBS is currently constructed.
And those are really solid football programs, too, to your point. Complete change of subject. Not really, but kind of. Are you a NCAA football guy? Are you going to be Are you going to be on the sticks for that? You're going to have
Absolutely. I have already told my son, who, has spent the last few years like letting me feel like I'm about to win a game of FIFA and then just burying me in the last few minutes of the game. I've been telling him, like, just wait, you're about to get yours and it is going to be ugly because So can I tell you what my all-time greatest flex is in NCAA football?
Yes.
So when I was in school in Alabama, one of my best friends from high school was recruited to play football there. And, but he was injury prone, never really got out of he was depth on the offensive line, basically his whole career. Right. So we stayed close the whole time and I used to flex on him and the other guys on the football team that would come over and hang out at the apartment, by using Alabama and telling them, I'm going to put you at quarterback and I'm still going to beat you.
I'm a NCAA diehard myself, Dimitri, and the reason I brought that up. So I'm thinking we should have an SEC Unfiltered online dynasty for sure. Like online.
Yes. Yeah.
Online dynasty, no doubt. I'm in another one with the Crane and Company guys. I just accepted my invite and I will be playing with Appalachian State and building the Mountaineers into the rightful powerhouse at this level. They deserve to have.
So I've got to decide, am I rolling with, like, FIU has always been my starting team, but to your point, never had the opportunity to play with App before. I've never had the opportunity to play with Charlotte before. All this long list of schools that we've never had the opportunity to play with.
Did they have a program the last time the game came out? 2014?
I think they probably had a program and were still in that transition era, because remember, when you start a football program, you have to spend 2 years at Division II and then 2 years, or maybe it's 3 years at the FCS level before you can come to FBS. I think they were in the middle of that.
Yeah. I would probably say my greatest flex of NCAA football, which, what a fun topic this is. Probably my greatest flex was, I mean, probably the greatest moment I ever had playing NCAA. There are two that stand out. One, and I had really good buddies in high school that we had a big group that were Georgia, Clemson, Carolina fans, whatever, some Tennessee. But I was playing with South Carolina. He was playing with Clemson. I mean, these would be heated games. Heated. Like, you don't talk for 30 minutes after. And I think we went to overtime. I never forget. Like, the game was, we were on a lake trip. We're at the lake house. We're playing a game after getting off the boat. But the game we're playing is at Clemson. The game goes to overtime, and I think I score a touchdown or whatever. He has to score a touchdown to keep the game going, gets down to the one-yard line, and it was a goal line stand,
four
straight plays. And, I mean, when I tell you, I just tossed the controller, and it's like, went nuts. And then the other core memory I have was, I think it was NCAA 06, because it was the one where you had, like, the flashing thing underneath the player or whatever.
Oh, sure. That was the one.
The zone or whatever.
Gerald was the
cover athlete. Right? Yes. Yeah. And I was playing a buddy of mine, and I was South Carolina, and he was Alabama. Mm. And I think it was a new move in the game that year, too, but it was Corey Boyd, the running back, meets the linebacker in the hole. They collide, and he, like, spins off the linebacker, takes it, like, 80 yards of the house. And that was just electric.
I think that people that have never played NCAA before are about to experience a level of the computer is cheating that you have never experienced in your life, because when you are playing NCAA football, if you get a slant game working, suddenly linebackers are going to have 9-foot verticals on you to keep you from completing those passes. I'm excited for it.
I remember those games in the middle 2000s where, like, you could literally, I think it was with the receiver, you could, like, stop your player and, like, the DB would stop and you just keep running.
Yep.
Like, you could just intentionally pass. Like, if you knew how to do it,
Yeah.
You intentionally pass interference. So yeah, it's, I was talking about this yesterday, actually, Dimitri, like the amount of content we're going, it's like, you talk about, I almost put this on here, believe it or not, Dimitri, of storylines we're going to be sick of. And I don't want to put it on here because I don't know when and if I'll get sick of it, but bro, you know, by the time we get to week four of the college football season, there will have been so much NCAA or EA Sports college football video game content, the way game day is going to use it. Like, we're going to be like, I'm getting kind of video game fatigue. Like, a little
bit. I guarantee you that week zero game day that they do from the studio, I guarantee you we will get a long behind the scenes feature of everybody recording their lines.
Yeah. I mean, dude, too, I think that if we're not getting to game day and game day's not doing, well, here's what the simulation said last night when we simulated the game. If we're not getting that.
Dude, I had not even considered the crossover of NCAA football and ESPN bet content we're about to get this season.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Yeah. I mean,
you know, if ESPN bet is still in business.
Yeah, that too. And I mean, I've always, you know, great segue. And like, I've always, every summer, I've done a bunch of like simulation content. And I don't know that I'm going to be able to simulate every game of every team, but we're going to be doing a lot of it. So Dimitri, nice. I'm going to be one of those people I'm talking about. Honestly, I bought a PS5 2 years ago for this reason, because I'm not much of a gamer outside of it.
But I'm the same way, dude. I told, like, my son plays all of the EA Sports games and 2K and stuff like that. I play the Star Wars games, and literally, I told my son, I completed Jedi Survivor, and I will not touch this thing until NCAA comes out now.
I love it. Guys, that's going to do it for us. Hey, Dimitri, it was a lot of fun, my friend. Appreciate
always good,
you all.
Buddy.
Yeah, thank you all so much for tuning in. The comments, the interaction, embracing the banter, we really appreciate it. Again, we're right here every single day live, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 4 p.m. Central on the Texas Sports Unfiltered platform, Monday through Friday. You can check us out. And you can check out all of our content across social media, YouTube, podcasts, all that good stuff at SEC Unfiltered. For Dimitri Irvanis, I'm Chris Phillips. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Yep, go ahead.
You got to say 2 to 3 p.m. Mountain for the good people of El Paso.
2 to 3 p.m. Mountain. God bless the good people of El Paso indeed. Guys, we're going to put a pin in it. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll talk to you tomorrow.